Telecast, episode 2.
I'm Kumar, and this
I'm
is
Graham.
Graham, hey, what's up? Yeah.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. So before we get started, I just want to give a quick shout out to Handy.com and the Handy app. If you don't know what that is, it's basically a pretty cool service that allows you to hire professionals to help you with any sort of thing you might need a handyman for. So, like, let's say you're moving and you need people to help you pick up furniture or throw stuff out or anything like that. They're there for you, and they're background checked. They'll show up on time. You can make an appointment for them. And just, you know, it's really easy to use. The app is available on iTunes, so make sure to download it. And if you use our Handy Dandy promo code, Almighty50, you can get 50% off their cleaning service. And if you just enter Almighty15, you can get 15% off any handyman, plumbing, or electrician services. So it's pretty cool. Check it out. Shout out to them for sponsoring this podcast.
Yeah, great app. So, we now join you. It's been a week since our first podcast, and we've had one win and three losses, unfortunately. Doesn't look good. Pelican season remains on the brink. It's been on the brink for a while, I guess, of what? Who knows? But it's on some brink somewhere. San Antonio, the W. I don't know if you guys watched this game, but that was a hell of a feel-good game. You ask me. I don't know. Did you get to see it? Did you watch it?
I did. It's always fun to beat San Antonio. Since I'm always bitter. Like, you got to respect San Antonio for what they've done as an organization over the past two decades. But you know, ever since that Game 7 playoffs we had when Chris Paul was still around, and they knocked us out of what was perhaps the most successful season of our franchise, I've been a bit bitter. And it's hard not to be.
Yeah, I was there.
you were at that game?
I was at that game.
Oh, man.
I didn't feel good. Did not feel good.
So it's always fun to like, you know, have our annual one game that we kind of steal from them. You know, 2 years ago, of course, it was that marquee win that launched us into the playoffs.
Oh, man.
But yeah, no, that was a good win. I enjoyed it. Good team ball.
Yeah, they came out. I'm looking at the box score now. They came out. They scored. They were down at halftime, but then they came out and outscored San Antonio by 10 in the third quarter, and then just blew them out of the water in the fourth quarter, which is just not really what this team does normally.
Yeah.
And then they almost did the same thing the next game against Washington. And for those of you out there saying, oh, man, the homestand, we blew it. We had a chance to go 4-2, and we blew it against Washington. We were supposed to beat Washington. They're a freaking good team. They're a better team than we are. And they, like, coming into that game, they were, like, 20-7 in their last 27 games. And they're on fire. They've won 16 home games in a row.
They're in the hunt for the 2 seed in the East.
Yeah.
The 2 seed after starting 2-9.
They're going to host a playoff game.
Yeah. They're going for home court, where we're trying to claw for any type of court.
Yeah, so don't act like, you know, us having a hard-fought loss to them. Because it was. We came out that first half looked like crap. But then, same thing, second half, they turned it on. The defensive end was really where they did it. Sparked by none other than Drew Holiday, who is a favorite on this podcast. But they held Washington 17 points in the third quarter, put up 33 themselves. Didn't have enough down the stretch. It was a close game all the way down to the end there. But then, unfortunately, that was they couldn't really ever turn it around for the last two games. Since then, they lost that overtime one in Toronto that's been talked about already. That's kind of just a real bummer.
That one's tough, man. That one
just a real bummer.
AD, you know, has
he wasn't unhappy.
Like, one of his worst offensive outings. Yeah.
4 of 18 in his
career. Yeah, he just could not hit. And you're like, man, had he shot his average, like, wouldn't
he
have
been open open
overtime.
look in overtime for, I forget if it was for the tie or for the lead, and he didn't even brick it. Like, he hit glass. He just, like, it was wide left.
Backward.
Wide left. It was ugly.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, what is going on? You know?
He also missed two free throws in overtime, and we lost by 2 points.
Yeah. We did. I was salty because that three that put him up by four in the last 2 minutes of overtime was total illegal screen.
Oh, yeah, they're not calling that.
There's like a tweet going around. They were like, call Lowry for three. The guy like shoulder checks. I forget who was chasing Lowry. It might have been Moore, Etuan Moore, but it was just like, oh my God, that was bad.
But so hey, credit to Lowry though. Lowry had a great game. He's, you know,
that game winner he hit. Oh. Solomon played it as well as you can.
Yeah, that was cold. That was ice cold.
Ice cold. We had our chances.
Yeah.
Didn't hold on. And then, of course, the most recent loss to the Detroit Pistons, which started out so promising. Anthony Davis had monster first half, had something like 23 or something in the first half. They didn't play too well, but were only down. They were down single digits at halftime, won the third quarter, and then just fell apart in the fourth. And I got a clip for you here. Here's what Gentry had to say about the loss and kind of the spot where they lost the lead down in the fourth quarter.
Coach, it seemed like you came out of the locker room very strong, erased the deficit, went up by eight, and then what happened tonight?
It's a pattern, you know. It's a pattern. All you got to do is look at the assists and points off of, I mean, the turnovers and the points off turnovers. We turn the ball over 15 times, they get 26 points, which is telling me that they're all live turnovers. You know, and they're running down and they're getting easy baskets.
Coach, you talk about these as, I guess, recurring themes. In some sense, do you feel like it's snowballing on this group a little bit?
It's not snowballing, it's just consistently there, you know. So it's not like it's more and more and more. It's the same thing that we're talking about right now, you know, that we talked about just the other night. And our turnovers came because we were just careless. You know, they weren't forced turnovers. You know, most of them were not forced turnovers. We just threw the ball away or lost the ball or, you know, just simple things that we have to be better than. We have to be better at that if we're going to win, and especially win on the road, you know. We play great. We shoot 50% from the field, you know, and we're going along great, and we come back and we're up eight. And then two out of the next three plays are turnovers.
But you heard him talking about these unforced errors, and you know, Anthony Davis. It was him. You know, it's hard to sit here and, you know, when you go look at the film and say, "Oh man, we lost because of Anthony Davis," when he had 31 points, 12 rebounds. The bench only scored like 21 points or 20 points, not even 21. No one really played particularly well except for Jrue Holiday, who's been on a tear recently, but we'll, more on that later. But it stood out to me. He had these couple of unforced errors. He was not getting or he was not hitting the shots that he was hitting in the first half. He was hitting them in the first half, not hitting them in the second half. And you could tell it was getting in his head. He wasn't feeding off his teammates. He was putting his head down every time he made a miss, and then there were a couple plays where he just, like, planted himself on defense and didn't do anything at all.
Yeah, I mean, it was tough because, like, I feel like we opened up that quarter. They rolled out, like, Tyreek, Terrence Jones, and I forgot who else they rolled out with them. Probably Etwan Moore, Monta Ellis, or Cunningham. I forgot what the exact five were, but it was for sure Tyreek and Terrence Jones. And man, oh man, was that offense ugly. Like,
yeah, I think Davis only sat out a minute and a half, or less than a minute and a half before he had to come back in.
Yeah, so it was.
It's hard to blame him for anything, really.
And like, you know, Tyreek, you look at his box score, it's like, oh, he put up 9 points in 18 minutes, so it's not terrible. But like that really doesn't encompass like how bad things looked when he was out there. I mean, there's a reason he's a negative 22 in 18 minutes. It just, like, there was no ball movement. I think he's been a little bit hesitant to drive, and he did make those, like, two pretty, like, crafty in ones that he had. Those were nice.
But, and those were during that stretch. All three of those of his field goals that he made were during that stretch at the end of the third and beginning of the fourth, where we lost the lead and fell apart. So
that was just him trying to make something out of nothing.
Exactly.
Like, the ball wasn't moving, players weren't cutting. Man, Terrence Jones had a possession where he, like, tried to isolate either Tobias Harris or Lure. I forgot which one it was. And, man, he just dribbled for, like, 15 seconds and tried to post up. And then he, like, threw a hot potato at Davis. He's like, ah, shoot, the shot clock's down to, like, 5 seconds. I cannot shake my man. Obviously, he can't shake his man. Make something out of nothing. And I'm like, that was such a waste of a possession. And, like, he has his moments where he's fun and he's energetic. But, man, like, just it's sometimes painful to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we can all agree on that. And that leaves the Pelicans now 19-31. 3.5 games out of the playoffs. 3.5 games out of the last place in the West.
Yeah, since we last recorded this, they really haven't made up any ground in the playoff race, and they really haven't lost any ground in the playoff race. Like, that's how bad things are in the West right now.
And I just want to say, I mentioned this on the last pod and in the the piece I wrote on bourbonstreetshots.com, Dallas is steaming on in. I'm telling you, they're gonna get back in this ugly, ugly race. They're gonna be in it at the end. They're ahead of us now. I think since the new year, they have the best net rating of any of the teams that have been fighting for the eighth place.
Hey, Timberwolves are marching in too.
That's
looks
true.
Like Towns is beginning to figure some things out.
Yeah. Portland's got the spot right now. Denver has lost a few, but in general has been on a good streak. Minnie's figuring it out. Dallas is coming through. We're really the team that's fallen out, and
the Kings.
I think we've had a tougher schedule lately. Looking at it, but we beat the tough teams. Like, we beat Cleveland and San Antonio. So, I mean, we'll see.
Our expected value from the home stretch, the 6-game home stretch, we went like 3-3. Like, that was the expected. I really thought Detroit was a winnable game.
Yeah, I did too.
That Detroit hasn't been playing well. After that Detroit game, I think that was probably the worst I've felt all season. And we've had some lows this season. But, like, you know, it was early season. I was like, maybe they'll figure it out. If they don't, hooray, like, we're tanking and, you know, we'll get a good pick. But, like, now that, you know, they had some marquee wins, they're relatively healthy. They, you know, you got Drew playing the best ball he's played all season. You're like, hey, this team has shown glimpses of putting it together. And just when they show you that maybe they can put it together, it's like, nope, we haven't put anything together.
Well, Drew, going on to good news, has scored double digits in his last 9 games, averaging 20.6 points per game, 8.1 assists, 3.3 rebounds, shooting 55% from the field and 51% from three. So he's been on fire for about 9 games now. And more than just the offensive stats, he's been a defensive monster. He's one of the top 5 defensive point guards in the league by defensive RPM.
If you haven't checked out the defensive highlights I made, check them out.
Yes.
Dude's been an Kumar animal had some on defense.
Fantastic defense. He's a monster. Monster, I tell you.
He
monster
was way. So, like, you know, it's crazy. Like, you know, we talked about on the last podcast him guarding larger players. And since then, you know, we put him on Kawhi. And, man, did he play Kawhi well. He pulled a chair on him once, which was always fun to watch. He defended him well in the post. He defended him a few times well in isolation. That was great. And meanwhile, on the other end, Pop had assigned both Danny Green and Kawhi to defend him, and Drew scored on him almost at will and was dishing and getting them lost in the screens. And it was like, who is this guy? Like, we needed this point guard. Where has he been?
Yeah. And I don't know if it's, you know, if they just told him to start looking for his own shot now or not or something like that. It's hard to believe that there would just be like a switch that easy to flick to make him look that much better. I don't think that.
And maybe it is a health thing.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe his toe is feeling better.
Yeah, that's true.
But whatever it is, it's good to see.
It is good to see. But regardless, the Pelicans are where they are, and people are shouting for the team to start making moves and blow it up. What are your thoughts on the get rid of everyone, go for draft picks and rookies around Davis? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think in a perfect world, it's a great idea. But we don't live in a perfect world. I don't think you can, as long as you have Anthony Davis on the team and he is healthy, I don't think you can possibly sell that idea to him and the other players, especially when they look at the standings. They're like, hey, Portland's like 2 games, 3 games ahead of us. That's it. That's a streak. Anybody can go on a streak.
You don't go to a team and tell them, hey, you're only 3 games out of the playoffs with 32 games left in the season, right, but we're going to pull the plug anyway.
Right.
Like, you guys have gotten yourselves to stay in the picture, but we don't think you're going to make it.
They got to do to something to light a fire under the players, because, you know, they have to tell them, like, hey, we don't want to jeopardize our future and trade this draft pick to help you guys make the playoffs. You guys need to get yourselves in the playoffs, because that draft pick is insurance. If you guys don't figure it out, that draft pick is going to help us down the road. And so, something needs to be done. And I'm sure, like, Gentry is a little to blame for that. Because, like, why do the Pels get up for the big games? And why don't they get up for the small ones, you know?
Yeah. There's a lot of blame to go around. But anyway, there is reason for optimism.
There is.
And here's why. Here's what I think. And here's why I'm also against the whole blow it up. And part of the reason I want to bring Drew Holiday back next year.
Mm-hmm.
The Pelicans, one of the major talking points around the team this year has been identity. They don't have an identity. But what do they do well? Like, what do they do well? Where can they hang their hat? What have they figured out? And I think they have figured out something. I think they've gotten something here. And it revolves around this small ball, this four-man unit of Drew Holiday, Solomon Hill, Dante Cunningham, and Anthony Davis. Has played 20 games together in a total of 212 minutes. And they are a plus 14.9, with a defensive rating of 92.7. 92.7. That's really good.
That's really, really good.
That's very good. That's really good. Take that into account and also say that of those 212 minutes, 160 of them came with Buddy Hield as the fifth guy in that group. Now, Buddy Hield would hold that group back, both on offense and defense. And it shows. Buddy Hield in that group, so if you go to a five-man lineup, Drew Holiday, Buddy Hield, Solomon Hill, Dante Cunningham, Anthony Davis, basically the starting lineup, plus 7.6 net rating, so not that bad. But sub in any other guard for Buddy Hield. Langston Galloway, plus 38.4. Etuan Moore, plus 41.4. Tim Frazier, plus 36.8. Now, those only make up about 50 minutes, because
total
most of the minutes come with Hield together, those three guards. You know, those are the three guards who've gotten, like, double-digit minutes in that lineup. I think Evans is next, and he's like right under double-digit minutes, but he's also like a plus 30-point something.
That's crazy.
So somebody healed out for any of those guards in that small ball lineup. I guess just taking an aside on Buddy, it shows the commitment that they're putting Buddy in that starting lineup because they want him to grow in that role.
Absolutely. So I think it's like it's mitigating. Like you're giving him real NBA minutes with real NBA starters, your core, with Drew and AD, against real NBA starters. And so masking his deficiencies with this newfound four-man lineup that's apparently really, really good is a good way to get him the reps that he needs and grow in an opportunity to grow. I feel like you put him in a different situation somewhere, weaker lineups on the bench, and it's not only more disastrous to the team, but it also like hinders his development.
Yeah, and I think it's a great setup that they have because this, I mean, if they're trying to build something, you got to bring these people back because like you found something, and something that you can have for multiple years. You know, Cunningham is not going to command a lot of money, and they like him, and I could see them bringing him back. Hill's under contract, Davis is under contract, Holiday, bring him back, put him under contract. You trade Holiday out, that goes your best defensive two-way piece in this lineup, in this like core that you have figured out is gone. So it's basically, it's all gone.
So I think on the last pod, I talked about with Holiday that, you know, he's shown that he can get it done on the offensive end, but, you know, been lost on, not lost, but like inattentive or gambling or out of position on defense in some seasons he's been here. He's also shown in his career that he can just be an absolute lockdown defender and that it was only like a matter of time where he puts two and two together. I think he's showing flashes, this streak of these past nine games. I think he's shown that, hey, I'm a bona fide two-way player. Can he keep it up? I don't know. I think that remains to be seen. But I've always been invested in him. I think that is absolutely his potential. And I think the longer he stays healthy, I think that's the key in his development. I mean, think of how much development he's missed out on the last 3 years, sitting out with his lower leg injury or, you know, the elbow to the face and that kind of stuff. Like, that's real game time reps. And he came here when he was, like, 23, and he's, like, I think he's 25 right now. Maybe he just turned 26. He's really young. And so that's some good development years that have been sort of compromised by injury and he's finally beginning to get more of a run and get more comfortable within our offense and just out being out there on the floor in general. And I really think he can put it together and be a two-way player. And that's why we need to bring him back.
Yeah. And this is his fourth year with Anthony Davis. And they have really only played two seasons together. They're over the 4 years that they've been together. When Drew and Davis play, the team has a record of 71-84. So not a winning record, but it basically amounts to a 36-37 win team. Mm-hmm. Over an 82 game season. Now with just those two, over the last 4 years, and you know you take in this year and last year where they're playing with nobody, and even the 2 years before, all these games where they, you know, a lot of games where either one of them leaves injured through the game, where they don't, you know, where Evans isn't there, Anderson isn't there, Gordon isn't there, or something this year where, like, you know, it's just a typical game this year. Like, the other day, or like against Detroit, where Davis has 31, Holiday has 22, and then like no one else has anything, right? It's no. Basically what happened against Detroit, even though it's not, you know, they were doing everything well and everyone was doing poorly. But you get my point. Those two together make up what is essentially a close to a 500 team. So if you can add something to that, well, you know, you can make the playoffs. I mean, that's just – I mean, I think if you can establish some kind of identity around them and then something that you can bring people into, then you could start looking at building a team. You can't just start throwing things together on the fly.
Become more aggressive and take more shots, and he's done that over as of late, and I think it's a successful recipe for this team.
Holiday, another drip ball, got it! Drew's got him up.
So that was my little spiel about Drew Holiday and this small ball lineup, which actually takes me into my next point. So you have this thing. You have this small ball thing that works, that you can bring back, that you can build off of. But there's a problem. Anthony Davis doesn't like playing the five full time. He gets hurt playing the five full time. He has said that he doesn't like playing the five full time. After he got selected to start the All-Star game this year, he went on to TNT and on live TV, said, and I quote, "I like playing the four, but right now, with the team we have, the way we are playing small ball, it's helpful. I'm beneficial for the team at the five. But most definitely, I like playing the four. I think it's my natural position. I never really guarded fives until DeAndre Jordan, Andre Drummond, and all these guys, and they're strong, ha ha. They're very strong. It's tough to guard them." Yes, yes. Oh, so you have two centers on the roster, and Omer Asik and Alexis Ajinsa, who aren't playing. But I have this idea, you know, if you want to build off of this defensive identity, which I really think they need to because they have something here, you need to find somebody, a defensive center, who can actually play in this team and be good for this team and play minutes, you know, not like every 20 games get in a game minutes, but like a real center, a real center.
Or you need to find someone that's kind of like an AD. I mean, obviously there's no one like an AD, but what I mean by that is someone that isn't traditionally a center, but is willing to do the dirty work instead of AD. Now,
and my point from that is, why do you keep seeing them shove Terrence Jones in the starting lineup when the small ball lineup works? Well, some of it's like injury based, but there's times in there where, and they say, oh, it's matchup based, but
golly,
like they force Terrence Jones into the starting lineup. And we've been rumored for Paul Millsap, but when more stuff came out about Paul Millsap, it turns out that we were asking about Dwight Howard too. You know, I think if you have that kind of defensive versatility where you can play big, you got Jrue Holiday, Etuan Moore, Buddy Hield, Solomon Hill, Anthony Davis, and someone like Dwight, that is a monster defensive lineup going big. And then you sub, your first two subs are, you know, you sub Buddy Hield out for Etuan Moore and the center out for Cunningham, then all of a sudden you go small and you still have great defenders 1 through 5. You got something there. What do you think about this? Everyone says we need a wing, we need scoring creators, but maybe we should start building off what we have and try and improve what we actually do well. What do you think about this? What would you feel if they somehow, you know, maybe they stretch Asik and trade Ajinsa or something? How would you feel if they brought in a defensive big?
I think it would depend on who the defensive big is. Obviously, like, at this point, we have a complete and utter shortage of talent. So from a talent perspective, I don't care who they bring in. Anything is an upgrade. So I'm fine with that. Now, let's say you bring in someone like Amir Johnson, right? Amir Johnson is your traditional 6'10 power forward type of guy who, you know, with Boston, and I think maybe he did this a little bit in Toronto. I'm unsure about that, but definitely in Boston, he gets minutes at the center position. And on our team, he would most definitely guard the bigger guys. Someone like that who does all the dirty work in terms of, like, you know, he bodies the post people. He sets the screens. He goes after the rebounds. It frees up AD to be AD. Would I want someone like that? Absolutely. In that type of mold, because I think it gives you, you know, a person. One, I think the Pelicans really want someone that can rim run or get down the floor in transition. Two, obviously, just someone that's not completely incompetent on the offensive end. So, like, you know, someone that you try to pass to, they just ball flies off their hands, or defenses just completely ignore them. So I bring up Amir Johnson because, like, you know, I think this is a contract year for him. I'm not sure what he's set to earn on the market. Or maybe there's an option, team option or his option. I'm unsure, but I feel like this is a contract year for him. I'll have to double check that. I feel like if we bring in someone like that and have him start at center, I'm all about it. If you say, let's bring in Andrew Bogut or Roy Hibbert. Hey, Bogut probably be all right, but let's bring in like Roy Hibbert. I'd be like, nah, pass. You know?
Yeah.
So I think it depends on the guy. There is a guy that's not a center that is rumored to be available via trade that I'd be interested for, and I want to hear your thoughts. Serge Ibaka.
I've thought about that. It depends, because he's also one of these expirings. You know, say that, maybe you trade like Tyreke Evans and something else for him. I don't want to give up a pick for Serge Ibaka, who's going to command a huge deal. And yeah, he doesn't play as well as he does at center as he does at power forward.
Here's my deal with Serge Ibaka. I think, you know, physically,
that's like the general idea, like a someone who you can put up there with Davis, who can do, you know, maybe take some of the brunt load off. You know, you could do some high low action, big to big action. You know, so you know, you see how well the offense sometimes looks when Monta Ellis is out there with Davis, because the ball like moves around and he can actually catch and pass the ball. You know, I'm not saying Ibaka is anything like that, but he's better than Ashik and Jensa, and he can actually defend the rim, you know.
He's still a very capable rim protector. So, I mean, obviously, okay, so here's my thing with Ibaka. I think he is your rich man's Dante Cunningham. He's bigger, more athletic, a better defender, a better rebounder, a better shooter, and a better offensive player. But you notice how Gentry loves to talk about Channing Frye, and here's your defensive Channing Frye. Obviously, you know, Ibaka is not maybe someone you want on the three-point line all the time, but I feel like that is who he's become at this stage of his career, and I'm okay with that. One, that gives spacing for AD. Two, like, I mean, I think that's just it's a cool threat to have at the five position. And so
the thing that enticed, you know, it's the offense. Yeah, you'll take what you can get because it's better than, you know, you can't get much worse than putting Davis next to two forwards of Solomon Hill and Dante Cunningham. So, like, put Serge Ibaka in there, the offense is better and defense is better. The defense, the defensive upside is what I'm looking at.
Yeah, it'd be crazy. You could put out, you know, your starting backcourt with Drew and Buddy, and you have Solomon Hill, AD, and Ibaka. You'll have more spacing than you currently have with Dante, or maybe about the same. That might be a wash. You'll definitely have more offensive power. You'll definitely have better rim protection, which sometimes, you know, when teams involve AD in a pick and roll and they draw him out to the 3-point line, who's there protecting the rim? Nobody, right?
Yeah.
You'll have better rim protection, and I mean he's not the best rebounder, but he's better than anybody we have that's not AD or Ashik.
Right. Yeah.
And so, yeah. I would
for the right price.
The price. So the price is the sticking point, right? He is, he's aging. He's had a knee injury before. There were some Reddit conspiracy theories that he might not be the age that he claims he is. So for you tinfoil hat wearers out there, obviously that's a sticking point for sure. No, I'm kidding. So he'll if you give him a 4-year contract or 5-year, I think you'd probably have to give him a 5-year. If you trade for him now.
See, I would not. Like, if he demanded a 5-year, I wouldn't feel comfortable giving Serge Ibaka a 5-year contract.
And that's what I was going to say. He'll be in his mid-30s. His game relies on athleticism, though I feel like him evolving into a jump shooter has kind of helped with that.
Yeah.
So again, he's younger than Paul Millsap, but you're looking at that similar, like, do I pay and kind of like invest myself into this team for the near future?
Yeah.
And, you know, while our ceiling might not be higher, our floor definitely is. And that's the argument. I feel like, I don't know, I would pay him Ryan Anderson money easy. Easy. Four
yeah.
years 80,
yeah.
I'd give him.
Yeah.
Anything beyond that,
I think he'd want more just because big men typically get paid more.
Oh,
I don't
yeah.
know why, but they do.
He's going to look at Biombo and be like, yo, I'm coming from a team that gave Biombo 75 mil. I'm better than
and
Biombo.
And I play in front. I'm on his team, and I play in front of him.
Right.
So, yeah.
But, I mean, I think if you – I don't know what his market is at the moment. The Magic are a very weird team who trade assets. Their asset valuation is a complete mystery to me.
Yeah.
With how they've
and
traded.
They want to make the playoffs this year.
They're not
like they're not going to, but like that's their MO. So if they like they probably want a lot back for Ibaka just because they gave up a lot for him.
Right. I think the rumor was they were looking for young players and or picks. And I'm like, "Oh, you mean like Oladipo and the 11th pick?"
Yeah. Okay, so they're 19 and 32, so they have a worse record than we do.
Yeah.
So I don't. I guess they wouldn't really want me. I don't think we have anything to help their playoff push. So I guess they'd want young players or picks, which we don't really have to give them.
Right, and they were. I mean, you know, like, oh, we're looking for wing scoring. It's like, hello, can we introduce you to a Tyreke Evans that sometimes plays a wing and sometimes scores?
Yeah.
If you squint really hard, he resembles a wing scorer. But I think, you know, here's the thing. It's like, if they're really desperate to get rid of him, which I don't think they have any reason to be, if you can acquire him for Tyreke and some sort of picks, a future first, for example, not this year's first, a future first, that's like top three protected or pick swap.
You wanted to, yeah, a pick swap, maybe heavily protected plus one of our seconds this year.
Right, the Philly second, something like that. That is a deal I'd be very interested in.
But
I think he's an underrated guy to watch out. Not watch out for, but an underrated guy I think would be an immediate boost to the team as well as a long-term one. He'd be a fun one to have around, but I don't know what that would say about Cheick Diallo.
Word. Yeah. If you just put some type of athletic defensive monster next to Davis, like you already have your defensive identity. You're adding to it. You got something. If you could put something like that together, which they haven't managed to do at all.
What do you think Derek Favors is going to get this summer, and from whom?
He's another guy like I like, but I think he'll get way overpaid. I don't know. He might be worth a max or whatever his max level is, but he's a good. He's a good player. He's like a consistent 18 and 10, I think his number is, not even 20 and 10, but he's had
injured
this
though.
Year.
Yeah.
He's another one that's like, I'd rather have Paul Millsap than Derek Favors. But Derek Favors, I think, is going to get better.
I don't think he's going to be better than Millsap. Maybe reach the level of Millsap.
No, like he's going to get better he's going to improve as a player.
Right, but he is younger and he may be more productive for you. In terms of years, but I think we agree that adding a big who can take some of the defensive burden off of Davis and offensive burden. I mean, obviously you want both. Would be a plus on this team.
Yeah, and it's not even taking the burden off. It's like just adding to the firepower. Because if you have this defensive small ball lineup, if you can add a really good defensive center, you can defend big and small at an elite level.
Poor Ashi.
You got a good team.
Going to listen to this and be like, wah, wah, what about me?
What about you? What about you?
Hey, man, this got to be the sweetest gig in the world. Make 50 mil to just sit on the bench, travel all over the country. That's a sweet gig.
Made the wrong career choice. Wrong career choices. This is funner because I get to sit here and eat food. Can't really. You can't. You get to sit on the bench, but you don't get to sit on the bench and eat.
Yeah, but think of all the food you could eat if you made millions of dollars.
Yeah, but they make you stay healthy and stuff.
Do they? And then you have an off season.
I don't know, man. It seems kind of hard. It seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I don't do work.
I don't do work. Anyway, moving on. Today, if you did not know, is February 2nd. That is the date of this podcast that we are recording for you right now.
Today.
And today. Today in history of the Pelicans. All right, history segment. Today, in February 2nd, history of the New Orleans Pelicans franchise. Who do you think has the career high, Pelicans Hornets career high, going back to 2002, I guess, in points on any February 2nd? I will give you a hint. It involves streak ending.
Streak ending.
Streak ending.
Streak ending. We ended the Atlanta Hawks win streak, but I feel like that was earlier in the season at one point. But streak ending, I think Davis scored like 30-something points. I'm not sure if that's the right date.
You are correct. Davis scored 29 points to end the Atlanta Hawks' 19-game win streak on February 2nd, 2015, on the 14-15 season.
Wow, someone needs to sign me up for Jeopardy.
Trebek. That's very impressive.
Trebek, very impressive. I'm coming for you.
So that game was a good 2014-15 game. Like that was
a great game.
Fantastic all-around effort, if anybody doesn't remember. Davis put up 29 and 13, shooting 52% from the field.
He dunked on the entire Hawks team.
Omer Asik, 17 rebounds.
Oof.
Omer game. Hit 5 of 6 free throws. Omer Asik, 17 rebounds, 5 of 6 free throws.
The original.
The 17
unicorn.
Rebounds would actually be the second highest total rebounds on February 2nd in Pelicans Hornets history. Do you know who had the first?
Tyson Chandler.
Number one amount of it. That would be correct. Tyson Chandler. Tyson
Man,
Chandler
so
on February 2nd. Where is it? Hold on. I lost it. Tyson, where did you go? 2007 in a New Orleans, Oklahoma City Thunder. Is that right? It says NOK. I thought that was 2006 that they were over there. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, he had 18 rebounds, 16 points. That was Tyson Chandler as the number one. Man. But back to this Atlanta game. You know, you got the great game by Davis, 29 and 13. You got the great game by Asik, 13 rebounds, hitting 5 of 6 free throws. You got a great game, Tyreke Evans, 7 of 14, 15 points, 12 assists, double-double from him. Eric Gordon put up 20 points, one of his few games where I liked him. 20 points, 7 assists for Eric Gordon. 7 assists for Eric Gordon. One of his higher totals.
Then you got Dante Cunningham there. He passed the ball?
Yeah, he passed the ball. Yeah. And then you get Ryan Anderson off the bench for 15 points on 10 shots. You got Quincy Pondexter adding in some points there. Actually, he only had 7. It's not a great game. Jimmer Fredette played 20 minutes in this game. What?
20 whole minutes. Those were the good days or the dark days.
John Salmons played 8 minutes.
Holy cow. I forgot we had John Salmons.
And we Yeah, Jimmer played 20 minutes. John played 8, and we won
we
by
15. We had those guys all the way up until February?
This says February 2nd. Is this right?
Holy crap.
That's what it says.
And we made the playoffs that year.
That's what it says. We made the playoffs that year.
Man. Okay.
This over the Atlanta Hawks. Ending the Atlanta Hawks, by the way, that made them 40-9. That was an amazing season by them. But that win bumped us up to 26-22 and was in the midst of a 6-1 stretch.
That we were 26-22 at that point. That's pretty cool.
Yep. That got us right back at one game below Phoenix. I think from then on out, we kind of took it over.
Oh, yeah. They blew it up. The infamous Brandon Knight trade.
Next week, yeah. Because they're stupid.
God, Phoenix is silly. Bledsoe's going off right now, though. Bledsoe's had like 340-point games in like the last week.
I saw somebody propose like a Drew Holiday for Bledsoe. I don't really think that makes sense for
either team.
Phoenix, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think. Would you want Bledsoe? I like Bledsoe.
Would you trade? Like, would you just swap?
No, I wouldn't do a straight up swap. I would want Bledsoe to play next to Drew Holiday, though.
That would be a fantastic backcourt. No, actually, I wouldn't want that because Bledsoe's whole thing is like he wants to be. He keeps getting put next to like another. Like they screwed it up because they put him and like Isaiah Thomas next to each other or whatever. They put him and Brandon Knight next to each other. Like never works.
But Drew's much better than those guys playing off the ball. Maybe I don't know about Isaiah. I mean, maybe Isaiah Thomas is like.
Isaiah was the main guy in Bledsoe.
Isaiah is not the guy he was. I mean, Isaiah now and the Isaiah of Phoenix aren't the same Isaiah.
Oh, totally different.
But Drew plays really well off of people. Like he's done so with Tyreek. He did so with Evan Turner. He did so with Eric Gordon. I mean, like Drew can do that. I like him as the attacking off guard that shares ball handling duties. And I mean, obviously Bledsoe's had his share of giving the ball up to various malcontent point guards. But I think that would be a fantastic backcourt.
Yeah. Bledsoe, he's good. He's amazing. Changing back to this February 2nd history here, I see that one of my favorite Pelicans ever, or sorry, he wasn't a Pelican, Hornet ever, and I have his autograph, Dan the Man Dickow.
Wow.
At 18 points.
That goes, wait, you have actually his autograph? What do you autograph?
A t-shirt. I caught a t-shirt that game, and he autographed it for me.
Nice. Nice
guy. Dan is a nice guy. I think he's a coach somewhere. I don't know where. Can't remember. I don't know. But those 18 points that he had on February 2nd, 2005 against Dallas are actually ninth. They don't have a lot of high-scoring guys on our lists. These aren't great lists.
Yeah, we're not a great team.
Jimmer has the 26th highest.
Maybe we should bring him back. You hear his agent leaking the stories like, oh, yeah, you know, he's simmered down. He doesn't have the dreams of being a 20-point-per-game star in the league anymore. He wants to come back.
Why would he want to leave China? He's like a 40-point-per-game god over there.
Well, like, the whole thing with Jimmer apparently was that like he always thought that he was meant to be a star and that like teams were systematically oppressing him and preventing him from being a star, which is obviously what his fans thought as well.
I mean, it's obvious, right?
Clearly.
He just hasn't had enough chances to run a team of his own.
Right. And then now, like, his agent's trying to push the narrative that, you know, he wants to, like, play in a reduced six-man type role. And it's like, dude, you've had, like, every opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, at this point, you don't, you know, belong in the league, I don't think. But I don't know. Maybe he can turn it around and find his way back in.
I don't know, man. I think he's got a sweet gig in China. I wouldn't give that up.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, there's also nothing like being home, so.
That's true. All right, moving on. Last little thing we have on the docket today is I just wanted to throw out some love to Solomon Hill. Solomon Hill, the much maligned.
So low.
Terrible contract, worst contract of the summer. So low, can't do anything but shoot threes at an average clip Hill.
But
I like Solomon Hill.
I do like Solomon Hill. For those of you who don't know, Solomon Hill, despite the memes, Solomon Hill is shooting a career high 35% from 3-point line. That's pretty big. That's an improvement.
And it's only been better
It's only
recently.
been better, and because in the last 10 games, guess how much he's shooting from the 3-point line?
I don't know, 37, 38,
Higher.
9.
He is in the famed 40% range on
Get
four
out of
attempts a
town.
game. He's shooting
Get out of town.
40% from the 3-point line in four attempts a game, 1.6 makes over the last 10 games. That's pretty cool.
Give it to him solo.
Given to him solo. So
It's
here's
like
my
a.
question is if he continues to hit threes at a 35%, 36%, let's say he levels out at 36% this season. It's optimistic. If he continues to hit threes at that rate and plays the defense he's been playing, is his contract worth it?
No.
No.
He is overpaid. But I still like him. You saw, I don't know if people saw, he like went down to see Cheick Diallo play in the D League. I don't know if people watched the Fox Sports New Orleans feeds for the Pelicans games, but at least on mine, on the online one, you can hear him talking every single time Buddy does anything. You can hear him scream, Buddy! It's
Buddy,
hilarious.
it's so fun. Anytime Buddy does anything, like good
Got
or
him
bad.
even more recently.
Buddy!
It stuck out a lot more recently, but you can really hear him yell, but
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think he's a great dude. I think the teammates, you ask, like,
please.
they've done, like, interviews, they're like, who's the funniest guy on the team? And they're like, Solomon Hill. Solo's the funniest guy on the team. There was one where Tyreek was giving an interview. I think it was after the Brooklyn game. And they were asking Tyreek about his handles. They're like, did you try to sham god that guy? And you could hear Solomon Hill in the background. He's like, oh, he's nice with it. He's a playground legend. He's got them handles. I'm like, this dude is a goof. But no, it's good to see that,
He's a
like, the
goof.
teammates like
He
him.
since they, yeah, since they switched the small ball on the 26th of December, he's got a when he's on the court, the Pelicans have a +4 net rating, which would be third on the team. He has a positive impact on the team.
Yeah.
Can't say it any other way than that.
I mean, if you
Go
subscribe
solo.
to the RPM stats, he has the third best RPM of the team, I believe. And
Oh, really?
yeah, and his defensive RPM is not terrible. It's in the positives, which is something that you would never would have seen on a Pelicans player in years past. So that's great,
Yeah,
especially at the
and
small
this
forward
is,
position.
yeah, you have what you have. You got him on a contract. He's not leaving. He's part of this core group that I've kind of been talking about. And if you really want to build towards their strengths, you got to just start building off the defensive end. And I feel like he can really be a system guy for this organization. And that's what they brought him in to be. They might have paid him a little bit too much to do it, but he's filling the shoes that they want him to fill. It'd be nice if he could figure out how to finish anything inside the arc. I'm sure that might come eventually. But he's hitting threes.
Hitting threes.
That's
I
all
think
you
it's step one.
hitting threes.
Step one. No, step two would be like a little bit playmaking. I think he's a good. He's not. I would say he's not a good playmaker, but he's a good ball mover. He definitely isn't one that hunts for his own shot or forces up things that he doesn't need to be forcing most of the time. But
Yeah.
I think he's good at seeing the next thing. So like, if he gets it, he makes the next pass.
Yeah,
And
and
that
he's starting
leads.
to understand like when he can kind of probe a little bit, like, oh, it's set up to where I can do my crossover, take it into the paint, and if anybody comes in, then I can make a pass.
Yeah.
He's doing less of the standing on offense, which was what
Right.
he was
They're
doing at the
involving
beginning
him
of
in some
this
pick and
season.
rolls with AD. Sometimes they use him as the screener or a guy that screens, that's the screener's defender. They're trying to use him in creative ways.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
yeah,
And,
it's been a little
I
bit
think
positive with
he'll
him.
only improve in the system. It's not like he's going to break out or anything like that, but he's going he's a positive for us.
I have hope. Solomon Hill breakout.
Solo horrible contract Hill.
Got him. Soon to be solo not so horrible contract Hill. Hopefully. Hopefully. That's right. That's the goal.
So coming up on the docket, the Pelicans have the Washington Wizards in Washington, which I will be at. Look for me. I'll be wearing my Mardi Gras.
You should make Davis a sign. Jersey.
I'm going to make a sign. It's got to be funny.
Yeah. It's got there's in DC, a picture so of Solomon Hill that I took from a Freeze Fame. I think you'll enjoy it.
Oh, I think I saw that.
You should make it a big head.
it's like a creepy smirk or something like that.
It's pretty creepy. It's great.
I might do that. I just blow it up. How much does it cost? Like what? Kinko's
is a thing, Kinko's, right?
Yeah, I heard about the only reason I know of Kinko's is because of Mitch Hedberg. I don't know if people know Mitch Hedberg, but you need to look up Mitch Hedberg because
a dog is forever in the push-up position.
So I can't tell you what hotel I'm staying at, but there are two trees involved. I got the lady's number at the front desk. It's 0. He's great. It's fantastic. But anyway, we got the Wizards game Saturday, February 4th. I will be there. They got Phoenix at home and Utah at home. And then they are away at Minnesota and Sacramento.
Utah would be a fun one. We haven't played Utah yet. They're a good team. They're a really good team this year. Gobert is a monster on defense. So it'd be interesting if they stick to small ball there. 7-2 Gobert versus Anthony Davis. That's going to be. I mean, they're a big physical team, so that'll definitely be interesting.
That will be interesting. So in the next six games, they play Phoenix twice, Minnesota once, and Sacramento once. So those are all teams that you're not really Phoenix, although Phoenix is around the same record as us anyway. But those are four teams that are right around within four games of the eighth seed that you're playing in the next six games. So we'll see what happens. I don't know if they're going to fall out or fall in. I don't know.
It's going to be status quo. We're going to check back in four games from now. It'll be like, hey, where are the Pelicans at? Oh, yeah, they're still two games behind the eighth seed, two games behind
exactly
the worst record.
Exactly
where they were before. And, should they make a trade? I don't know. I bet the front office hates this. It's like, gosh, can you decide if you're going to be good or if you're going to suck already? Like, I mean, come on.
I know.
Because
the Bucks have traded Miles Plumlee, the floodgates are going to open now. Everybody's going to make trades. I'm like,
good
that's
Lord.
Just,
that was sure. such a weird trade. That was a really weird trade. I don't know why. Why would Charlotte do that?
Take Oshik.
Yeah, Oshik's better than Plumlee, right?
Take it. It's a shorter deal. Oshik's a shorter deal.
Cheaper.
You're just trying to get rid of Hibbert and Hawes. I mean,
Hawes like has please. Like 6 mil. I don't know how many years, but it's only like 6 mil. Hibbert's an expiring. Like I don't. That's whatever.
Like, yeah, it
I
seemed just, like an unnecessary move.
I don't
didn't
see
really
why the Hornets did that. The Hornets are in free fall. They've like, I think they're like four out of the last. They've won only four games out of like the last 18 or so.
They're
like four
I think
14.
They're only four games. They're like four. They're within five games of us. I think it's four, but it's like their eighth seed is only like one. Yeah, they're the eighth seed, and they're only one game better than the eighth seed in the West. So everybody's complaining about the race for the West eight. Well, the East eight is just as bad.
Yeah. I mean, Milwaukee's also in free fall, so like I guess they made a trade that theoretically makes them better. I mean, I think Roy Hibbert's better than whatever the heck they were starting at center. Yeah.
Well, they're not done yet because now they have four centers. And
they got what? Henson, Monroe, Hibbert.
Henson, Monroe, Hawes, and Hibbert.
Hawes, yeah.
And
Hawes
all, are those all? They got three H's and an M.
Triple H. Bringing it down. Greg Monroe. Would you trade him? Would you trade for him? Tariq?
No. That's not. I said defensive center.
Bucks people are saying
defensive center. Kumar.
Bucks fan said he's been good on defense. Defensive RPM says he's been decent as well. He has, let me see if I can find him.
You're lying to me.
I'm not lying to you.
Why would you lie?
What is he listed as? Is he listed as a center or a power forward?
He might be a power forward.
He has, okay, no, he's been mediocre. He's plus 0.6.
Yeah, in both of them.
But he's plus 0.6 in both of them. So he's equally mediocre on offense and defense.
That means something, right?
Means he's automatically the third best player on this team.
Anyway, do you have anything else?
I can't think of anything else I want to add for this one. I think more so than any other part of the season, this is the most blah I've felt. Like, gosh, we lost.
We're playing six. Within the next six games, we have four of the bottom teams in the West. So
yeah, that's how it works with the Pels. You know, they go on a losing streak, and then just when you're like, they really should blow it up. They're like, hey, we just won four in a row. We're back.
They're just a bunch of Pelotees. Got them. That's about it. All right. Yeah. We're calling it. Okay. I'm calling it.
That's it.
I blew it.
All right. We're going to call it.
Oh, God.
I think that's it. That's it for tonight. We'll have some more stuff.
All right. Okay, Falcons fans. Tune in next
time. Yeah, thanks for listening. Check us out on iTunes. Make sure to subscribe.